Craig, has there ever been a more Cardinals prospect than Max Schrock?
I don't know. See, it's tough because like he was a very A's prospect too, you know, when he was there. So I don't know.
Aren't Cardinals prospects just successful A's prospects?
Oh, that's well, I can't I don't think I can add anything to that.
Episode 99 of There Is No Offseason, a baseball prospectus podcast focusing solely on Fantasy Keeper and Dynasty League formats. I am your host, Ben Carsley of the BP Fantasy Team, and I am joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and BP's minor league editor, Craig Goldstein. Craig, on a scale from 1 to how you felt earlier today, how optimistic are you about episode 99?
You know, I'm coming off watching The Good Place season finale, and I feel kind of about as optimistic as I did at the end of that, which is pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can live with that. That's acceptable. Yeah. Brett, how are you? I feel like I haven't spoken to you a lot this week. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's been busy, but good.
That bodes well for the 1-1 you guys have been working on.
Well, I was just going to say this is like the last civil conversation Brett and I will have for a week or so. I'm going to start duking that out pretty soon. All right. Well, we apologize for missing last week, but once upon a time recording, 3 out of 4 weeks would be something. I don't think anyone would believe we were capable of it. So apologies for missing last week, but we are back with episode 99. And because we skipped last week, that means we will get to tackle two different lists. So we are going to discuss Brett's second base and third base dynasty rankings. And then after that, I have a real mind teaser for everybody. Got a real important topic that I want to dive into. But in the interest of playing catch up, Brett, I am shuffling the keys to you. And why don't you take us through your top 50 dynasty second baseman?
All right, so we'll kind of get into this with the third base list as well. But as the offensive environment grows, second and third base have certainly at least kept up with every other position, and the names get noticeably more interesting the later you get on this list versus previous years, and I think we'll see the same thing in third base, but second base list starts really only in one place, and I don't think we need to delve too deeply into this. Ben, has Jose Altuve secured a sort of 20 homer floor for you for at least the time being? Now that he's done it in back to back years.
Yeah, I mean, I still think. I guess in my mind, I sort of pigeonhole him more in like the 15 to 20 range. But if you want to tell me 20 is your new baseline, I think that's totally fair. I guess I just still have a little bit of a hard time adjusting with him because he hit 24 in 2016, and then he only hit 24 again last year, despite what we know about sort of the offensive environment and the balls and everything like that. So I don't know if that means his true power actually took a small step backward. But either way, I mean, I think we're netting out in the high teens to low 20s, and given everything else he brings to the table, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. So Craig, so the number two guy on this list is Jose Ramirez. He's actually eligible at both positions we're going to talk about, but we ranked him at second base here. Similar question for you, but different number. How do you view Jose Ramirez's power at this point? Because I think everyone is comfortable with the average and the steal contributions where they are. But it's really the home runs that come between him being a really good fantasy option and being a truly elite fantasy option.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he went from 11 in 152 games in 2016 to 29 in 2017. There's a slight tick up in his fly ball percentage, about 3 percentage points, but he more than doubled his homer per fly ball. And as much as I you know, we harp on the ball change a lot, but the ball change wasn't only 2017, right? It was kind of starting in the second half of 2015 when we saw a lot of this. I don't think he's a 30 homer bat. I mean, this is a guy I like a lot. I took him at the end of the first round in RDI. I really believe in the skill set, but I think it's probably more of a low 20s in terms of expectations than upper 20s. And I think there's a chance that, you know, he's in the 18 to 22 range more realistically. Again, just because if the fly ball percentage stays under 40%, which it was at 39.7 last year, 36% the year before, I don't know why the homer per fly ball would more than double. I don't know what else would be different. Now, he still hits a ton of doubles, and he did that in 2016 too, so maybe it's that he's just getting a little bit stronger. But I don't know. It was 120 points on his slugging percentage. It's just a lot to assume that that's the new baseline for me.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I mean, the nice thing about Ramirez is that even if he does hit 18 homers next year, even if he hits 15 homers next year, the overall skill set makes him an extremely valuable player.
Absolutely.
You know, he is a five category, you know, an extreme five category contributor, regardless, especially because of the batting average. So, I think if the new baseline is in the low to mid 20s, and I'm a little skeptical that it is, but if it is, then, we're talking about probably a top 10 dynasty asset, right? I mean, if he comes out and hits.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, he's only 25 too.
What was that?
He's only 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so the only thing, I think, you know, the comparison I had in my head was, you know, looking at Francisco Lindor, right, who at 15 in 2016, which was really good along with his speed, and then he jumped to 33 homers last year. But the difference is Francisco Lindor added 14 percentage points onto his fly ball percentage. Now, he jumped his homer per fly ball rate 4 percentage points too, but it's a lot easier to buy into that when you're putting it in the air that much more.
True, and Lindor went up to a 14% home run to fly ball rate, and his fly ball home run to fly ball rate his rookie year was 13%. So
it's in the range.
Lindor next week when we do shortstops, but this for me, this is kind of where the list opens up a little bit. So Ben, and of all the directions that you can go in at number three. Who is your third ranked dynasty second baseman, assuming Altuve and Ramirez are 1-2 for you?
Yeah, no, we have the same top three. I think you have Moncada here, and I agree. I have a much harder time right after this. It's funny that you said that. I mean, I think 1, 2, and 3 I didn't really wrestle with at all, and it's after this where you have Ozzie Albies and D. Gordon is where I start to run into a little bit more trouble. But I think people are getting a little bit impatient with Moncada and not understanding the true breadth of what his upside could be. I think we just like use the nebulous, oh, he's a really high upside player, whenever we're talking about really good prospects or really good young players. Moncada is like a potential top two rounder, not just a top guy at his position. He's a potential absolute monster. So even though the risk is there, I think the insane reward still justifies this third spot.
Yeah, I'm going to go one step further and say I think he's I think you might even be underselling his upside. I think he's a potential top five player, mm-hmm. period. I think he really is one of the few young players in baseball who has an actual chance to be a 30-30 guy. He's got the power for it. He's got the speed for it. He's certainly a little ways from putting it together, but yeah, I mean, it is drool worthy, the fantasy upside here.
Can I just ask something, since you both seem to be in agreement that there's a tier at these, those top two or three players, how long do you think Jose Altuve holds the top spot? Like, how secure is he there?
I think there's a good chance he's not there next year.
Okay. And that's just for dynasty purposes? Or, like, how many years do you think Jose Altuve is the number one second baseman in redrafts? Like, each individual year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I would say 2 more years, comfortably.
And you think, I'm assuming you think it's Moncada who?
I do. I think if anyone's going to unseat him in 2019, it's going to be Moncada.
And Ben.
And he doesn't need to out-earn him. I don't think he's going to out-earn him.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, do you have a similar viewpoint?
I wouldn't be shocked if he holds on for another few years, just because I think people will crave the stability. Moncada, even if he clicks, I think is going to be a guy who definitely is a little bit of a volatile asset. And I agree with Brett that, you know, he might have a few top five finishes, but I feel like he's a guy who every once in a while is also going to bottom out a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, I don't expect Altuve to still hold this position in 5 years, but maybe I'll go closer to 2 or 3 before he loses it.
Craig, what do you have as the over under on 50 steal seasons for D. Gordon going forward? Let me rephrase that, because that was terribly phrased.
Okay.
Over under on 50 steal seasons for D. Gordon, 1.5.
I'll go under.
Okay.
I'll go under. Yeah, I mean, I still like him, and I think he'll still be plenty valuable, but I don't know. There's a lot going on in terms of he's learning a new position on the fly. I don't know if he's going to be using his legs a lot more just in the field, you know, just being out in center as opposed to at second. I could see that having an effect over the long term, just over the course of a full season. I think certainly I would probably say like several in the 40s, right? Like 3, but I don't know if he gets to 50.
All right. So now, you know, I mean, we have a bunch of young players with major league experience. We not all quite as young, but I'm going to reel off. D. Gordon came in at 5th. I'm going to read off the other next 5 guys on this list. We've got Ozzie Albies, Jonathan Scope, Ian Happ, Chris Taylor, and Ruby Odor. Craig, of these 5 players, which one do you think will be the highest ranked on next year's list?
He's not my favorite of them, but I think the best chance to be the highest ranked is Albies, who you have at 4. I think we've talked about him a lot, and I've been a low person on him. I'm not, but I don't know how to argue with, you know, my main concern with him is the power output and whether he was going to get the bat knocked out of his hand to some degree. But he hit 15 homers between AAA and the majors last year. So I don't know how tenable a position that is. I know that's, you know, it's 1 year. There can be volatility there, but with the ball being how it is, if he's a 10 homer guy and he's going to run like we know he can, I think he has the best chance.
Okay. Ben, opposite question to you. Of this group of 5, who do you think is the most likely to be out of the top 10 entirely next year?
Brett, you're not going to like my answer.
Go ahead.
I am still not as high on Ian Happ as you are. I mean, I know he hit 24 homers last year, which is impressive for a rookie. But again, given the sort of the context and the environment that we're in, it's less impressive than it would have been a few years ago. I'm still not sold. He's a second baseman. I mean, I think he will retain eligibility for a few years, but if there are some guys around him with some really standout tools on this list, right? You have Albies and Gordon for speed. You have Scope, who has big, big power for the position. Taylor had a crazy year. So I think Hap is just, by virtue of sort of not having that special tool and not doing anything as well, or not doing everything as well as Taylor, I mean, I think he's sort of where I naturally gravitate, even though I acknowledge that it's impressive that he's only really entering his age 23 season.
So neither of you picked Brunetto Dor, who is ninth on this list, and I had a little bit of a hard time figuring out what to do with him, just because he had such a weird year last year. Craig, what do you expect from Odor this year? And how much do you think he bounces back and reestablishes some of that value?
I mean, I think there's a good chance he bounces back, and I think he's probably undervalued right now just because of how bad he was. I mean, sir, if you go by like Fangraphs WAR, he was negative one WAR, which is extremely bad. He's obviously, he didn't hit for average. He did hit 30 home runs. I mean, even as bad as he was, he hit 30 home runs and stole 15 bases. So if that's what you're doing in one of your worst seasons, that's not atrocious from a fantasy output. You know what I mean? So I actually think he's pretty undervalued as a fantasy asset right now. He is going to be 24 next year. And we saw, look, I mean, there are a lot of issues with the approach, but he can hit. He hit 270 in 2016. He hit 260 in 2015. If he can stick in that range, I mean, there's the potential he's more of a 30 to 35 homer bat with 10 to 15 steals, and that's incredibly valuable. I don't think anyone should be giving up on Brunetto Dor. And frankly, if I'm either a rebuilding team or trying to take a high risk, high reward asset, I would absolutely be investing in Odor, because again, if your high risk season in terms of the not panning out ends up at 30 and 15, what have you truly lost? Is that crazy?
I don't think it's crazy, because I don't think the batting average is going to crater again like it did last year. You know, there is a lot of good that you can undo with a batting average as low as Odor's was in 2017. But even if he hits 240, I mean, that is a pretty valuable player.
It's pretty crazy. So in standard 5x5 leagues, Player Rater only has him as the 30th best second baseman, despite going 30-15 because of all the damage he did with average.
Yeah. Really,
which kind of makes me question some things about Player Rater, honestly.
But I mean, so maybe it's all the damage he did with average, but how likely do we think it is that he's a 204 average guy? I mean, that's the real question.
Almost 0%.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know he swung and missed more. He also walked more, which was a positive, and his BABIP was atrocious. I mean, he's not ever going to be like a 350 BABIP guy, but because he puts the ball in the air a ton. But I mean, it was like 224. And I know that can be explained if you have bad contact, but if you're hitting 30 home runs, like how bad is your contact consistently?
Well, his hard hit rate was actually higher in 2017 than it was in either 2015 or 2016, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting.
Yeah, he's.
I'm talking myself into Brunetto Dor here.
I know it's just such a strange year, and you know, on top of all of that, Odor was supposed to be sort of an average first fantasy play as a prospect.
Yeah, and, a long time ago.
Huh?
A long time ago, yeah.
A long time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the truth.
Brett, I have questions about the prospects you have grouped right here.
Yeah, I was gonna throw this to Craig, because I know you wrote about this in your prospect column, and I have them ranked here in the order that I like them. But Craig, how do you slot Hira, Kingery, and
Calhoun.
And Willie Calhoun. There we go. How do you slot the three of them, and are they as close in your mind as I think they are in Ben's minds?
I think they're pretty close. I can see a case for, honestly, I could even see a case for Kingery first and Hero second. I think Calhoun is in third. I know he can hit. I mean, he's essentially, in a lot of ways, Rougned Odor, but trading average for speed, to some degree. Kingery, I think, has the potential just because of his speed, right? He can run more than I mean, I think he can run more than Calhoun's not a runner, and Hira might pitch in, but it's not going to be the same degree. I think Kingery has maybe the best chance for the highest impact just because of stolen bases and where that category is at. But I mean, Hira could probably make a case with his hit tool alone just on batting average. But I would probably have them in this order as you do, Brett, Hira, Kingery, and Calhoun. But I could see someone making a case for Kingery first, especially given just the gap between, you know, one's in the low minors right now, the other's in AAA.
So in the top 101 final I just sent Brett earlier tonight, mm-hmm. I have Kingery at 26th overall, Calhoun at 28th overall, and Hira at 30th overall.
Oh, so you have Hira third. What's your case there?
Just time to the majors. I think Hira is, I acknowledge, he maybe has the highest upside, but Kingery and Calhoun are going to play right now. And I think Kingery's speed, like you already touched on. So I have no qualms at all about whatever order you want to put these three in.
Yeah, they're very close.
For, you know, they're not just grouped together closely on this list. I mean, in my top 100, they're within six spots of each other.
Yeah. And I mean, I can buy time to the majors. I think there is some, look, I mean, I've said multiple times, you know, my thing on Willie Calhoun is Willie Calhoun can fucking hit. But there is some risks, right? Like if he doesn't hit as well as we all think he does, you know, what is his value? So I think there's just a little more risk in that than there is with Hira, even given his time to the majors and his upside. So, but I can certainly understand the case.
Sure. I also think Hira's time to majors is being overstated a little bit. Very advanced hitter, and I don't think he'll see Milwaukee in 2018, but I think he could be pretty close to ready by the end of the year. I think we probably won't see him till 2019 anyway, but I could see him easily getting into the upper minors by, you know, by the halfway point.
Yeah, double A by midseason would not surprise me.
Yeah.
But the difference is, and to Ben's point, Calhoun is going to be in the majors by then, and Kingery very well could be.
Oh yeah, I think they will both be. I think both of them will be in the majors by the All-Star break, which is definitely the difference. I just think the difference is less than a year of MLB time.
Okay, sure.
All right, so let's talk about some veterans a little bit. So we've talked about a lot of young hitters. There is an interestingly bright future at the position. You know, so much so that we have guys like, well, at least I ranked guys like Brian Dozier, Daniel Murphy, Robinson Cano, Eduardo Nunez after all of these players that we've discussed. Craig, would you put the veterans at the high producing veterans who are in their 30s at this point on the list? Or do you think I am underselling how much high end potential they have in the medium term?
I think there's a chance you're underselling some of them. I think Murphy, you know, if he's a guy who's going to hit, you know, between 320 and 340 with mid 20s homers, that's really valuable, right?
Oh yeah.
And I think you can make a case like, I would go back to agree with Ben. Like, I think you have Ian Happ a little too high. And I think, I don't know. There's a lot of fluidity, I think, between these kind of sections after the very top. And I could see kind of mixing in youth with age just based on guys you like. But if you're going with kind of like a cohesive set of rules to go by. I certainly understand why you land here. But I, for example, like Murphy a little more than Dozier as a 30s guy. I know it could drop off pretty quick, but, you know, Murphy's only 32, right? Or he's going into his age 33 season. You know, I think you could see three to four more years of production like we've seen the last few, and that's immensely valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with counting stats he could have in that Washington lineup. I mean, he's only signed there for one more year, but
let me ask you a question, because right after Dozier and Murphy, you have Whit Merrifield and Raul Mondesi. This obviously was before Mondesi was kind of displaced by Elcides Escobar. How much does that affect your Mondesi ranking? Like, how far would you drop him?
I would not drop him at all. Doesn't affect it one bit.
Interesting. I think it should.
I don't buy that he's not going to play. I see the quotes and I understand what I'm reading, but I don't believe that will happen. It is too insane for me to believe.
Okay. I would just point out that, like, you're a Mets fan, so you should probably be able to buy into this.
Well, true, but it's not the Mets.
Okay, you're right. The Royals have never shown a weird dedication to Alcides Escobar.
Oh no, they have. Okay, I think he could play. I think he could play even if Escobar does play.
That's.
I don't.
We should keep it moving. That's fine. I think it should probably affect it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'm still very high on Mondesi. He's still very young. He's still got a lot of upside. But let's move on. Robinson Cano is 17th on this list. That feels sad, but it feels right. Does that feel the same to both of you guys?
Yeah, I think I think there's maybe a better argument for having him lower than higher at this point. But overall, this seems about right to me. I mean, I'm not really that familiar with what he did last year. He was good, right? Not like otherworldly, but pretty good.
Yeah, it was 280, 23 homers. I mean, given that he had 40 homers the year before, just 39 the year before, the power drop off was pretty concerning to me.
He was not a top 15 second baseman last year.
Right.
Which does not bode well for how he might age. Not that I think he'll be bad anytime soon, but yeah, I think the great Cano is mostly gone, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, with that being said, he's 35. I mean, this seems about right to me. I'm interested in why you have LeMahieu behind him, given how much younger LeMahieu is.
I don't buy. It's hard to buy the profile when the profile is so batting average and Coors dependent. He's going to be a free agent after this coming season. And I mean, some of it is risk that he won't be in Colorado, just because I think his value drop. He's one of those guys whose value just kind of drops immediately if he's not in Coors. I don't know if he's not in Coors and he's hitting, you know, 280, 290 with single digit homers and single digit steals, that's really just not all that useful.
That's it. You've stunned us into silence because of DJ LeMahieu.
That's true.
Should have just ended Tino there, like, entirely. Never get to episode 100. Just trail off on a DJ LeMahieu thought.
I mean,
call it a career.
And a Max Pentecost thought. All right, so let's talk about a couple of quick hit names that you guys like as we move further down the list. Craig, number 25 is Eysan Diaz, who was traded since this list came out. Where are you on him? Are you still optimistic about his ceiling?
Yeah, I am. It was a down year, and it was a situation where he struggled a little bit. I think he faced a lot of lefties, and he's as a lefty hitter, I think that was tough. I saw him a few games where he shortened up his swing versus lefties, went right up the middle, which was really encouraging to me. He did break his hammy bone towards the end of the year, which was obviously going to affect him as he's kind of more power over hit at this point. It's still a really good-looking swing. I think, you know, it was not the greatest year in terms of progress. He did not build on his 2016 season, but all the talent that he showed that year was still very present. And I think it was just kind of, you know, within the variance that you see of a young kid. He was his age 21 season, facing harder competition than he's ever faced before. I still think he's likely to see a bunch of time in Double-A next year. I don't know if they'll start him there, but I think he'll see time in Double-A. I think this is a reasonable spot for him. I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic.
Cool. Let's go down a couple of spots lower for Ben. Why don't you wax poetic for us on Garrett Hampson?
Oh, it's my blind spot. It's a speedy hit tool middle infielder who is going to grow up to crush my dreams someday. I think.
But this one's in Colorado.
Exactly. I also have trouble staying away from. What is that? Did you hear that? Or is that just me?
That's just you.
Oh, okay. That's good. I'm going crazy. I think there's a lot to like. He stole 51 bases last year. No, he doesn't have 50 steal speed if he does reach the majors. But I do think he's a guy that could potentially, if it all comes together, you know, hit between 280 and 300, maybe slap his way to 7-10 steals and 7-10 homers and legitimately challenge for 30 steals, sort of like what I still pretend Jose Peraza is. So I like Hampson a lot, and he snuck into the back end of my top 101 because it gets thinner a lot faster than you'd think of. So I'm all in. He's my new speedy boy, not my big beefy boy, but he's my new speedy boy.
Craig, has there ever been a more Cardinals prospect than Max Schrock?
I don't know. See, it's tough because like he was a very A's prospect too. You know, when he was there. So, I don't know.
Aren't Cardinals prospects just successful A's prospects?
Oh, that's, well, I can't, I don't think I can add anything to that. I think that's as bad as well said as you can make it.
That's true. All right, so we don't need to go into too much on this list. Craig, is there anyone else on the list that you want to cover, either because you particularly like them or you'd like to rip them before we stop?
From that point on, no, I don't think so. I was going to applaud. Is this going to go up the list a little bit? But I was going to applaud your ranking of Estuary Ruiz, the second baseman the Padres got from Kansas City in the Cahill and other. There were a lot of people in that trade. But I really like him. I like his mix of tools. I know it's very far off, but I like your aggressive ranking on him.
Cool. Ben, anyone else?
I mean, I was going to talk about Garrett Hampson if you hadn't asked me about it.
Pedroia.
Do you want me to talk about Pedroia? He's hurt all the time. He's an old second baseman with knee problems. So when he's on the field, I still think he's capable of producing like a top 20 guy at the position, but I don't know how often he's going to stay on the field moving forward. Yeah. The guy who I was going to point out, I don't know how good he is, but Shed Long is fun. He might be more fun than good, but that's okay.
He's fun in a Garrett Hampson sort of way, just without Coors.
Yeah. He's got a better backstory. He used to be a catcher. That's kind of cool.
It is. I really wish he was still a catcher because it would be so much fun to have a true steals first catcher in fantasy.
Yeah, that would be, I don't even know how we would do that.
I don't know. It'd be crazy. Craig, 10 seconds. How much do you think Daniel Brito will hit?
Oh God. I don't have a good answer for that, Brett.
276.
Wow. Okay. Sure.
There you go. Is it true that Lourdes Gurriel is Cuban for Enya?
Really, a question for both of you. Obviously, it's Brett's list, but you've Chris Bryant 1, Nolan Arenado 2, Rendon 3, Devers 4, Vladito 5, Sano 6, Donaldson 7, Senzel 8. I think Justin Turner's 10 with Gallo in front of him. That's a hell of a top 10. It's really deep and top tier talent. Where are you making, Ben? I'll ask you, since obviously Brett wrote this, where are you making your breaks here in terms of dynasty value?
After Arenado, and then I don't know. I might go after Arenado, and then after Sano at this point, and then Donaldson is sort of like a tier of his own in between Senzel. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it can. I think, Brett, I want to know, how are you?
You want me to answer that question? Or?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. I mean, you made your own tiers here.
Yeah,
so.
I think Brian and Arenado are a tier. I think the other tier is after Vlad. I think there is a little bit of separation. There's more separation than I thought there was going to be between that top five and Sano. And you know, some of it is because the environment of baseball is catching up to what Miguel Sano was supposed to do. But you know, it's not to say that he's not really good. I mean, this whole top 10 is ridiculous.
It takes a hard turn after the top 10.
I adore Justin Turner, and he is 10th, and I
got a bone to pick with you there.
So let's pick it. Let's go.
Well, I don't understand. I'd like to hear why Gallo. I mean, I know the answer is going to be age, but putting Gallo over Turner is a lot to me.
Yeah, it's a combination of things. It's the age, and that I don't think Gallo is a 210 hitter. I think Gallo he hits more fly balls than almost anyone. He hits the ball harder than almost anyone.
More fly balls than anyone makes it more likely he's a low 200s hitter then.
Well, it makes it less likely that he's a 260 hitter. Okay. But I think he's a 230, 240 hitter, and I think that is enough to make him extraordinarily valuable. I think he's going to be a 50 to 60 home run bat. I think he's going to make a little bit more contact. He still had an obnoxious 37% strikeout rate. That was down from 46% his rookie year. I think he can get down into.
Yeah, but the 46% was a small sample. I mean, I don't know that anyone expected him to sit at 46.
No.
But this is also not an Aaron Judge turnaround, right? Like, this is not like 50 to mid-20s, right?
What do you mean?
Well, Judge went from striking out literally half the time, right? Like, it was like around 50% to the mid-20s, and he was not, you know. If you think Joey Gallo is a true talent 230 to 240 hitter, like, there are going to be several, probably a few seasons where he's down in the 210s to 220s.
True, but that means there are also a couple of seasons where he could be in the 250s or 260s.
Sure.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that, but I mean, I just, the alternative to me is Justin Turner hits 320. I think you can lock in 20 homers. I think there's room to go up higher. He does not strike out. So when you talk about 320 with a 10% strikeout rate, he's putting the ball in play an incredible amount.
Oh, he absolutely is. I mean, to be honest, I think if Turner were a better bet to play a full season, then I think it would be either closer or he might eclipse Gallo. But you know, part of it is that Turner is more risky now, and
there's risk. All right, so Ben, who between Gallo and Turner, you know, do you have a take on this?
Yeah, I mean, even as the world's largest Joey Gallo fan, I think what Turner brings to the table in the short term, coupled with the huge risk that Gallo still has, I would have Turner ahead of him too. So it physically pains me to say that, but I think I would also take Turner.
Yeah, I was definitely expecting to be the lone voice on Turner there, so I'm pleasantly surprised. Just to skip up to Miguel Sano for a second, Brett, I don't know. Are you at all concerned about his longevity at third base? And I don't know how much you bake that in. He also has the injury, which factors into that. And I think we're assuming he'll be ready for the start of the season, but it's not a given. I just am interested in a little more nuance on Sano at six. Because as we said, there's a lot of talent in this top 10.
Yeah, I'm not really concerned about the eligibility. He might not be someone who plays 150 games at third base, but I don't really think the Twins have a much better option to use there. And he's really not that bad defensively. The health is potentially a concern, and you know, I think that could end up forcing him to get, you know, close to half his starts at DH. But I don't think the eligibility is really in question over the next, you know, 3 to 4 years.
Okay. So skipping outside the top 10, I alluded to it earlier. I think it takes a hard dive outside the top 10, although I do like some of the names in the teens a little more than I do the ones right outside the top 10. Ben, I know you and I like Jake Lamb, who Brett has at 16. What's your insight on him?
I just think, and then we actually had a really good debate about Lamb when we were considering whether or not to pop him in RDI. Mm-hmm. And basically where we landed is that as scary as the platoon splits can be with him, he's good enough that it's tough to envision him not getting at least, you know, 450, 500 plate appearances most years. And right. In that time, he can still easily be a 25, maybe even 30 homer guy. So I think the floor with him is maybe a little higher than people realize, and the ceiling, you know, if he gets better against same side pitching, or if he, you know, his approach improves as much in the next 2 years as the last 2 years, you know, the ceiling is something I think potentially pretty, pretty special. So I would probably have him. I mean, I like him better than anybody else in this tier.
I think I do as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the platoon issues are more of a playing time concern, which obviously affects everything else, because he's played, you know, right around 150 games the last two seasons. He's hit 29 and 30 home runs. He's put together pretty comparable, you know, slash lines, and they're really good. I mean, that's, you know, he hit 29 home runs in 2016, 30 in 2017. Again, if this is the baseline with him struggling as much as he did against lefties, and I know he's had some first half or second half splits as well. Again, taking the season in totality, if this is the baseline and he actually addresses some of his problems versus lefties or maintains some more consistency over the course of a season, he's going to be even better than he has been. And so I think there's really a lot more upside here than there is downside, even given those platoon issues.
Yeah.
So so Brett, why do you have him at the back of this section?
I honestly think I don't think the batting average goes anywhere from here, and I think he is reasonably safe as a 250, you know, 30-ish homer guy. But I mean, he did that this year, and I think kind of maxed out where his counting stats were going to be. He had over 100 runs batted in. You know, given his approach, I think he's always going to be slightly lower in RBI than you think, just because he walks a bit. He walks a bit. He strikes out a bit.
Walks a lot.
Yeah. But you know, he scored 90 runs, and he was the 15th best third baseman for fantasy last year. So you know, I just don't. If he's going to be 250 and 30, he's also not that young. He's 27. I mean, I think Kyle Seager, you know, Kyle Seager is a slot ahead of him. I think Seager is a little bit older, but I think Seager is a much better bet to. I think he's a better bet to hit more homers than Lamb and hit for a better average. Counting stats, I think, would be a wash, but I think he's, you know, he's one of those guys. I think Suarez gets overlooked in Cincinnati. I think it's a similar profile to Lamb, honestly. I think the three of them are.
He's another one of our RDI selections, so I'm not.
Yeah, I think the 11 through 16 slot I think is extremely close all around, but yeah, I mean I think you could easily make an argument for any of these six guys to head this group, so no, I don't think you're off the mark at all for preferring Lamb to any of these guys. I mean they're all going to be. They'd all be bundled together pretty closely in the top 500.
Okay, and then Brett, you have a trio of prospects at 17, 18, 19. Can you just touch on why you have them where you do?
Sure. So McMahon has obviously the best shot of playing time among these three in 2018. You know, I'm still skeptical that Colorado is actually going to give him a full slate of at bats. I think they're probably going to sign someone that takes away some of his playing time. But you know, as of right now, they haven't. So I think his value is certainly inflated by Coors. But you know, all three of these guys are going to be in favorable hitting situations. You know, if and when they do make the majors. Ryan Mountcastle, I think he's the best natural hitter of these three. I think he's probably got the most upside from a batting average perspective and the most upside from a power perspective. You know, kind of the question with Mountcastle is whether the approach is going to get in the way of him making the most of his offensive tools. And you know he certainly got exposed in his first glimpse of the upper minors, but you know that's to be expected. He's young. He'll have another shot at it this year. I think he'll acquit himself well. Michael Chavis, who's third, is certainly no lock to find playing time anywhere, but he's got comparable power to Mountcastle, and you know I think he has a little bit more upside in batting average than he gets credit for. I don't think he's ever going to be a 280, 290 hitter, but you know I think he could be in the 260, 270 range, which could make him a pretty valuable hitter, especially in Fenway if a spot opens up for him somewhere. I mean, he's kind of blocked at his natural positions, at least for right now. So we'll see how that goes in the near future.
Okay, so Brett, I'm going to stick with you for a quick second because I they're only two spots apart, so it's nitpicking. But I think people are going to ask why is Michael Chavis ahead of Austin Riley? And let me lay out their basic case here. Really quick. Both guys were high A and double A in 2017. Riley, I know, doesn't have kind of necessarily the track record in terms of Chavis was a first round pick and all of that, but Riley at double A, 48 games, so not a small sample, 315, 389, 511, and that's in the Southern League. And also, he hit, you know, for power in a tough league in the Florida State League in High A. Chavis kind of had it flipped, was more successful in High A in 60 games, was 318, 388, 641, but dropped off to 250, 310, 492 in Double A. Chavis has 2 years on Riley, or about 18 months. Why is Chavis, and I think Riley kind of improved his chances of sticking at third, whereas I think Chavis is more of a toss-up. So that's, I think that's the case for Riley over Chavis. What for you separated them there?
Yeah, I think Chavis has a better chance of making more contact in the majors. I think Riley, you know, based on what I've seen and read of Riley, I think it's more of a question against more advanced pitching as to whether he can really get to the power that he would need to get to in order to be a, you know, a potential top, you know, 10, 12 third baseman down the line. I mean, I don't think either of these guys are super likely to be elite options at third base, but I feel like the Chavis's floor is higher, and you know, I think that makes up for the slight gap in age and you know, the slight flip in performance. Chavis was really, really good in high A, and that is not an easy league or a home park to hit that well. And he had a, you know, he had 1029 OPS in yeah. high A.
No, he was very good. So there's one more Flores injected in here just completely unnecessarily. I don't know why we're getting into one more Flores, but then there's another trio of prospects headlined by Riley, then Andujar and Berger. You know, I think we've talked about Berger a decent amount. We just talked about Riley. Ben, I mean, what's your take on Andujar, who I think is a pretty divisive guy? And I will admit I'm a little surprised to see him as high as he is on a fantasy list in this context.
Yeah, I think he almost has a better chance to be a star and a worse chance to be a regular than a lot of the guys we've just spoken about. Mm-hmm. When I was writing him up for the get to know third base prospects list, I sort of said, you know, usually we refer to someone as being more than the greater than the sum of their parts. He's almost less than the sum of his parts. He's really raw in the field. I know there's questions about the approach and about the ultimate utility of the hit tool, which obviously isn't going to let him get to his power if he can't hit. So there's a lot of things that could go wrong, basically, that I think make sense for why he's down here. But he's the type of guy where if it clicks, I think this is going to look conservative. But it's right about where I would have him, too. I think in in mine, I think I had him I might have even had him above Riley, which I know how you'll feel about that.
I don't hate him. I do know there are varying takes, and I think he's more – yeah, I don't have the ceiling on him that I think some others do, and I kind of assumed you would have Berger ahead of him. I assume that's a discussion you'll have with Brett on the 101. But Brett, at 24, and then we'll start skipping around a little more, Adrian Beltre has for seemingly the last 4 years posed a tough question in terms of There's obviously short-term value, but how do we factor this in a dynasty sense? This is yet another, you know, another iteration of that. What were the factors you weighed here?
Honestly, part of the factor of why Beltre is in the top 25 is because the position is a little bit deeper than it has been in previous years. I think he's going to continue to be really good and valuable from a fantasy standpoint until the day he finally retires. And, you know, who knows when that's going to be. I don't know whether 2018 is going to be his last season. I don't think it will be, but it's certainly possible. I believe his contract is up after 2018. This was the 2 year extension he signed like last year, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think he's almost a lock to hit 300 and, you know, hit at a, you know, 25 ish homer pace for as long as he can stay on the field. And, you know, you certainly shouldn't expect that to be anywhere near 150 games. But as long as he's really good, and as long as you can still you know, pick up someone in the back, you know, 15 on this list if you need to kind of take over for him once you've once he's moved on from the majors. I don't think I could drop him any lower than where he is right now.
Sure. Ben, Evan Longoria down at 27, new team. I assume we're going to get a 900 OPS joke or jab in here from you, but is there a lot to like here, or is there anything to like here from a fantasy perspective? I mean, he kind of, in a lot of ways, is what he is. But he's not that old. He's not that bad. Is that really all there is to be said?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I don't know how much really changes contextually for him, right? I mean, he's going from a meh lineup to a meh lineup. He's going from a meh park to a meh park. So I don't really see a reason to value. Maybe he's going to a slightly better lineup. I don't really see
a
reason.
Yeah, I mean, with McCutcheon, you have a case.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I don't really see a reason to value him dramatically differently than we would have before the trade, which is, you know, I think he'll be a solid starting third baseman for another few years, but he's, you know, he's 32, so only another few years.
Yeah. So, Brett, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to give you a comment. They're going to be on two different people. I'll start with a comment. I think Ryan Healy sucks, and that's what I have to say about that. Colton cool. Welker is mm-hmm. is probably people who scout the stat line, and I don't mean that in any sort of pejorative sense in this way. I think it's how we discover and look into a lot of guys. Colton Welker is probably likely to excite those people. What's the actual report on him? Not scouting report, but in terms of fantasy value, what can they expect?
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of batting average in not a ton of playing time. He only, he only got, I think, maybe 270 at bats or so.
Yeah, just short of 280. Yeah,
in Asheville, and
it's a great place to hit.
It is a great place to hit. It's a better place to hit for a lefty than a righty, but it's still a good place for everybody to hit. You know, the thing about Welker is that, you know, he's in the Rockies system, and everywhere he goes is going to be a good place to hit. He's going to be in a good place to hit next year when he goes to high A. He's going to be in consistently good environments more or less throughout the way up. I think, you know, I think people might be overstating his upside, but I think his bat to ball ability is strong. I think he could be the kind of hitter that, you know, Coors can inflate their batting average to around 300. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I think he's probably more of a, you know, 275 guy at 275, 280 at sea level, with maybe 20 homers. Probably maxes out around 20 homers. But I think he could be really solid. And, you know, anytime you have someone who has a good, you know, who has a good eye for contact, has a good swing, and, you know, has a reasonably high floor, and they're in the Rockies system, it's a good combination. I was not close to putting him in the that second tier of prospects with Riley and Andujar and Berger. He doesn't fit with that group, both from a timeline perspective and from an upside perspective. But he certainly fits above the prospects that then come in the, you know, 30 to 50 range on this list. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So I just, with the remaining 29 guys here, can you just pick, Ben, one that you like and one that you don't like more than the rest? And I'm actually going to ask you, Ben, I'm going to take a choice away from you and ask you to preview your Colin Moran players to avoid. For your don't like, but feel free to counter that with someone you like more than maybe Brett has him.
Well, my Colin Moran players to avoid was just basically, it was centered around like, okay, we're all avoiding Colin Moran. But if you're in like a TDG exercise league and you've had a few beers and you're going through roster resources and you're like, huh, I've heard of Colin Moran, and he, you know, there's some recency bias. He's been in the news lately, and he's going to have a relatively clear path to playing time. Maybe, you know, maybe he's someone who I could grab and use as a No, don't. He's not good. His best case scenario, I said, was like 280 with 15 homers, which is what Asdrubal Cabrera did last year, and he was the 35th best third baseman. So your absolute upside is the 35th best third baseman, and then frankly, I don't think he's even going to reach those lofty heights. So that was it. It's just basically was keep avoiding Colin Moran. Don't
trust your
don't. I am surprised that Colin Moran ranks so far below Brian Anderson, who I consider Colin Moran to just be like the fancy dog version of Brian Anderson. So
he's like a Bichon Frise.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I think of. I don't think there is anyone I like in this. I mean, I like Lucas Erceg, but I feel like we've talked about him a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Would certainly take him over fancy dog Brian Anderson or Brian Anderson. So I think Brett did well there.
Yeah, the one thing that I will throw out about Erceg, and we mentioned this, I forget which second baseman we talked about this in relation to, but there were a lot of left-handed pitchers in the Florida State League this year, and Erceg was another guy.
It was based a lot of Diaz,
and they were on the same team, but Erceg had the same thing, just a lot of lefties, I think, skewed his performance a little bit, and I think is causing people to be a little bit more down on him than they should be, but he can still hit.
Yeah, and probably also good long-term to be exposed that way. Brett, is there a guy that you want to call out in a positive way? Or I guess someone you really want people to avoid?
Really want people to avoid.
You can say no.
I mean, I could not give less of a shit about Christian Arroyo. I just really could not. I could not care less about him. I don't think he's going to do anything interesting for fantasy, even if he does end up playing. That's about it. I mean,
Hot take.
I will take one of each as well. I think Nolan Jones is maybe way too low on this. I think he probably deserves to be up in the Colin Moran and or should I say the fancy dog and yeah, I think he deserves to be in that discussion. I know that there's a long lead time there and there's still a lot of development to be had, but I think the upside more than justifies it, and I think putting him behind Chase Headley is cruel and unusual punishment in a lot of ways. And I think if we're throwing out people to avoid, I'm going to suggest people avoid Enya.
Welcome back to episode 99 of Tino, a new and improved Tino, now with three breaks, so that's pretty exciting. And real quick, before we get out of here, we'd be remiss if we did not mention that apparently baseball is considering bringing back the bullpen cart. So for some of us on this podcast who are young, we don't even really remember a time with the bullpen cart. But whereas Brett and Craig were around for the invention of the automobile, I can only imagine that this is particularly exciting for them. So the question I want to pose for us real quick before we get out tonight is, Brett, who are some of the players who you think will be most benefited by the bullpen cart coming back?
I'm going to go in a slightly different direction than I think you might be expecting me to go in. I'll leave that for you guys. I want to see Kelvin Herrera enter on a bullpen cart because I imagine that Kelvin Herrera on a bullpen cart would come in like just two t-shirt guns just shooting into the stands. And I think it would be an awesome sight to behold. Are you allowed to fire t-shirt guns as you're riding in from the bullpen cart? What is the
point of having a bullpen cart if you can't do that?
Yeah. I mean, I get excited watching Kelvin Herrera and he's excited when he pitches, and there's just too much excitement for there not to be t-shirt guns.
That's fair. A few of my ideas were, was it Heath Bell who fell?
Chad Qualls.
So Chad Qualls.
He fell so many times.
Chad Qualls would have been, maybe he'd still be pitching if he had a bullpen cart. I think Jung Ho Kang could just always use a bullpen cart because then he could have a designated driver. And then for my last one, Chengmin Wong, because that was leg injuries that derailed his career. So he's a lanky ass motherfucker, and perhaps if he could bullpen cart out to the mound and then remain in the bullpen,
he might need a stretch bullpen.
That's fine, but as long as he's allowed to still sit in the bullpen cart and just doesn't have to use his legs, I feel like the bullpen cart could be really big for him.
So my only one is I would like to see Todd Coffey refuse to use the bullpen cart.
Could he race the bullpen cart?
That's exactly. He would sprint alongside it.
That's a sight. Well, that's aggressive.
It's either a sight or a socialism. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I'd like to see the episode of The Simpsons with the really huge guy in the little car. I want to see John Roush in an extraordinarily tiny bullpen cart.
So are you proposing that we have different size bullpen carts just for max hilarity, depending on who's going up there?
Yes, I am absolutely suggesting.
I like that. What kind of bullpen cart would who's the stupid ambidextrous dude, Pat Vendette? What would he do? What size is he?
Can I make you even more mad about him for a second? Yeah. It's Pat Venditti.
Nope, that's why I didn't make it. Don't care for it. Two T's, two E's, two arms to throw with, but no plus pitches. That's what you get.
Yeah. That is rough.
I don't know how to get from bullpen cart to Enya, guys. I'm having a real tough time. Except now, for some reason, I'm visualizing Enya playing in the background.
I think her new album is called Bullpen Cart.
Welcome back to episode 99 of Tino for the fourth time. As always, we'll send you out with a little housekeeping. Guys, the BP annual, it's just about ready to be shipped. So if you enjoy how the three of us, four of us actually, if we include George, write, but want to see some of our thoughts actually put down coherently, the BP annual is for you, and you can pre-order that right now on Amazon.
You can order that. It is shipping and it is in stores.
It's in stores. You could still order it on Amazon, though. Either one is fine. Shout out to the guy who's going to be once again disappointed. It's not just a list of players alphabetically. maybe 2019 will be the year for him.
Maybe.
You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Tino Podcast and get in touch with us through email at tinopodcast@gmail.com. You can find Brett at Brett Sayer BP. You can find Craig at CD, that's CD as in...
Can't decide.
Goldstein. You can find our producer George at George Bissell, and you can find me at Ben Carsley. Thanks for listening and have a good night.
not have done a break?
Yeah, you prematurely onioned. It's okay. George is having performance issues. You're prematurely onioning. It's not the night for Tino lovers.